Hello, and welcome to another episode of At Any Rate. This is Shika Chaturvedi, and I'm the head of JP Morgan's Global Natural Gas Strategy. And today I'm joined by Tracy Allen, our head of Global Agricultural Strategy. Welcome, Tracy. So today we want to do a little bit of an update on what's going on in the ags and natural gas markets. And while these two markets may not seem related, they are in fact tied to each other by weather. And weather has been the single largest driver of moves, price moves in both of these markets of late. So to give you an idea for like the U.S. market, JP Morgan's meteorologist Paul Janish has stated that the winter months of December, Jan, Feb, and March are the third warmest on record since 1950. And he now has a new forecast for April, which is around 292 gas-weighted HDDs. And this is the second warmest April since 1950. His forecast for May remains at 132 power-weighted CDDs, so cooling degree days, which is around the 10-year normal. But still, all in all, a very, very warm lean from winter going into the summer period. So Tracy, I'm going to hand it over to you so you can kind of discuss how weather has been an impact on the ags markets. I know you had some crop reports that came out earlier this week. So if you don't mind discussing what that has done and impacted for your market so far.
Thanks so much, Shika. And let's not forget that ags really just is a jumble of gas here. And certainly also connected, of course, by that all important fertilizer channel. I think first and foremost, as you mentioned, tremendous amounts of weather out there for the ags complex in its entirety. The implication of the El Nino that is currently breaking down, at least we think it is breaking down, has been quite impactful, certainly for South American grains and oilseeds, not least certainly Brazilian crops there. We've had broader impacts, not necessarily Enzo related, but a lot of weather-related challenges for the cocoa crop across West Africa. All of us are, I'm sure, really panicking around the future supply of our favorite chocolate bars and the price at which that might cost us all. Cocoa prices have surged. They've really been the leaders across commodities and potentially also broader asset classes through the course of this year. Nominal historic highs are being made every other day, following some very wet weather in West Africa last year, which has then been subsequently followed by some very intense winds, all reducing the size of the crop in the world's prominent producer of cocoa. And that's really manifested in the largest deficit on record for the market. Not only have producers been not able to deliver their commitments to government authorities, that's then flowing on to smaller volumes onto the physical market. The consumer now, of course, is also scrambling to price out and to manage some risk there. All of this is essentially pushing the market into fresh highs. And we do think this is a very structurally driven event. There's been very limited investment in the plantations, certainly across West Africa, with smallholder farmers tending to very small areas, having tremendous disease pressures to contend with over recent years, and actually receiving very, very low proportions of the price, less than 20% of the actual market price in many cases. And whilst prices at the farm gate have been increased very recently, it's unlikely to have a meaningful impact on supply anytime soon. So from that point of view, we are very hopeful that farmers in other regions like Asia, South America, may be able to harness these price gains, increase their input use, and try and simulate some yield increases in the upcoming crops. But it looks certainly to us that structurally higher cocoa prices are here for longer. More broadly speaking, as you mentioned, Shika, we had the April WASDE from the USDA out overnight. Not a lot of change there in terms of the numbers, but I think the key takeaways for me certainly are there have been a lot of weather-related issues in Brazil for the corn crop, certainly the safrinha crop, dry conditions there. And there are quite historically wide variations between the local estimates for crops in South America and what the US DA is certainly reporting. It concerns me, Shika, because we have historically short seasonal position held by investors across the markets, across the Chicago Board of Trade markets at the moment. And that, for my mind, poses a lot of short covering risk over the months ahead, which also corresponds to the US growing season, and farmers are just gearing up to get those crops in the ground across much of the US as we speak, and certainly also across much of Europe over the weeks ahead. So ags have been an underperformer, I would say, certainly through the first few months of 2024 across the broader commodities complex, and are starting to get a bit more of a kick here, not least driven by the upside across the softs and the cocoa market. But I think grains are also starting to push higher here off some lows for the season there. As I said, it does look to us as though El Nino is deteriorating, and the, you know, climate meteorologists and the climate bureaus are projecting with quite high odds, in fact, a swing back towards La Nina, certainly La Nina summer, if not thereafter, from, you know, sort of mid-2024, moving from a neutral ENSO back into La Nina. It does raise the risk potentially of maybe a little bit more heat across the likes of the Midwest in the US, something that we're watching out for, and should hopefully improve rainfall prospects across much of Asia, certainly through that southwest monsoon season. And we also have to watch out again for implications of any dryness across the likes of Argentina and potentially also southern Brazil there. So, Shika, no shortage of weather-related challenges across ags markets now. How are things shaping up across gas markets?
Well, yeah, you know, Tracy, I have to say, so in the U.S. natural gas market, weather did its damage, right? And without winter weather, you are just definitively going to have to make an adjustment and price lower, either to gain new demand or to reduce supply. And unfortunately, we just don't have any more levers on the demand side from a coal to gas switching perspective. So ultimately, what we are having to do is we're going to have to correct the balance to the supply side, which we have seen. We've seen producers bring down production levels by 5 to 6 Bs a day so far to kind of tighten up the market. But I have to tell you, yesterday, the EIA published a number, a weekly storage number, that was completely far more bearish than the market had expected. So it was an injection of 24 BCF, where I think the market was probably sitting somewhere closer to 10 to 14 BCF. So there is certainly still a lot more work to be done. The biggest surprise portion was in the South Central region. Again, the salts injected. And I just want to remind our listeners that the salts are right now the primary problem in the U.S. natural gas market. Those storage facilities are rapidly filling up. Essentially, salts are now 299 BCF full. The max that we've seen is around 400 BCF. And ultimately, that is a path that we can probably get to quickly if we don't see further tightening. So basically, by the end of June, we could be full in salts. And these are discretionary storage facilities. So if in fact that were to happen, you would see a lot of gas dumping on the grid. You would have to see prices go lower. So in my view, I think that more work needs to be done on the supply side at this point in time, just to kind of correct for the fact that weather is still not playing out in April. Producers are going to just definitely have to do more work. Is that another 2 to 3 Bs a day down? I'm not sure yet, but they will clearly probably manifest if it has to from a curtailment perspective. The other thing that I think that has changed in the market this week, and we have to watch this very closely, is that we started to see Freeport LNG flows ramp back up, and now NOMs are back to basically zero again. So essentially, the market is kind of waiting to see if Freeport is actually on its way back up and ramping up, or if there's some more problems that they're dealing with right now at the facility. The longer that that facility stays offline, the more bearish it is for the U.S. natural gas market in the near term. And what I have to say is that ultimately, though, we are still bullish in our outlook for natural gas prices going into the back half of 24. But this is really predicated on the idea that you stay lower for longer now, you cause and you force a more kind of a stronger supply side change, and at the same time you start to see some green shoots of demand that pop up from power burns later in summer as heat is available, especially if we do transition to this La Nina sort of period. We are looking for warmer, you know, sort of summers from that perspective, but also from LNG. So Plaquemines, we now have first LNG for that facility to be in July. So that means feed gas, we do expect to have start in June, right at that same point in time when power generation should be picking up. So we do think that the balance has this chance of tightening up very quickly. And the question really becomes, if you are now, call it 97 Bs a day in production, how quickly can a producer react to price and bring back production to 105 BCF a day? And I would say the lower you go and the longer you stay at that lower level, the more difficult it is to ramp very quickly. And so for me, all of this sort of adds up to an idea that we are going to be tighter in that back half of 24. So even as I'm warning right now that we probably have a path lower in price at this moment on the front, I still very much am holding on to this 4Q24 price forecast of $4. It seems so far away and so high right now. I get it, but this is the natural gas market, and it's literally a hop, skip, and a jump at oftentimes with the way sort of the volatility is in this market. The last thing I kind of want to bring up is that the other thing that kind of made news this week was that the Louisiana courts have actually kind of sided with DT in a dispute that they have right now with Energy Transfer. So if everyone recalls, Energy Transfer is kind of the crux of my sort of 2025 bullish story. From a midstream perspective, their blocking of Williams's Louisiana Energy Gateway pipeline and Momentum's NG3 pipeline is what makes me feel like Henry Hub is going to rally, particularly when Plaquemines comes on. There's just no new supply source that's there to feed Plaquemines at this time. So with the ruling that occurred, I would have to say that I'm not quite sure yet how that will impact Williams's pipeline or the NG3 pipeline. It does seem like these disputes are separate litigation pieces. However, it certainly does send a message that in Louisiana, there is a way. You know, if you need to get your pipes on, you could probably find a way. And I don't think that there's any doubt that Williams was going to get Louisiana Energy Gateway on. It's a question of timing. And we still believe that when Williams delayed that pipeline to the second half of 25, as opposed to where it was supposed to come on in 4Q24, which was in time for Plaquemines, that in fact, that this was actually going to be the case. And we still do think that's the case, right? We think that there is going to be still this delay, and it still leaves open this opportunity for Cal-25 to really rally based off of Hub cash price rallying. So, you know, we do have a lofty expectation for Cal-25. It's sitting at 475. Again, it feels very far away from where the market is right now, but we're not very concerned about it based on the latest sort of announcements that have happened this week. But we'll have to watch and see. And weather is going to be one of the most important factors to watch and see, particularly with natural gas power burn and just outright electricity load growth that we're seeing in the U.S. market with AI, crypto, data centers, you name it, we have it. It'll be definitely an interesting summer to look at. So ultimately, that's what we have for this week from Tracy and myself. So this is our latest commodities edition of JP Morgan At Any Rate podcast. And we want to thank you all for listening. And we look forward to continuing the conversation next week. This communication is provided for information purposes only. Please refer to JP Morgan research reports related to its content for more information, including important disclosures. Copyright 2024, JP Morgan Chase & Company, all rights reserved. This episode was recorded on April 12, 2024.